Hey kids, this is Rich Outfield.
Well, I guess I should confess that I am starting to get old. All the latest music fads all passed me by and left me cold. All the kids are talking slang, I won't pretend to understand. All my friends are getting married, mortgages and pension plans.
And this is another episode of the Rich Outcast. I'm not in the car. It is a Sunday evening, and it's super hot inside, and so I thought I would come outside and enjoy a little bit of the cool air. It rained today, and then I thought, well, why not take my microphone and talk for 5 to 10 minutes, and we'll do it as a Rich Outcast. It's June when I'm recording this. I imagine this episode will drop in July. Maybe not. Maybe it'll be August, but I don't think so. Let's see. Basically, Big Anklevich and I made an agreement, a challenge to ourselves, a pact, if you will, that we would write a novel in 2015. And we looked at our schedules and we decided that June through August would be the most optimal time. Mostly Big is the one that has varying degrees of busyness because he's got kids that need to be taken to school early in the morning and picked up, and he's got these things called sweeps, which are in the television business the 3 months of the year when people pay attention to the ratings and decide how much to charge for advertising. And so during those 3 months, everybody works extra hard to draw viewers to their shows, special programs and special guests. And in his line of work in the news editing, there will be all sorts of news specials and special stories and things designed to draw the viewer. And you'll actually see the commercials on TV, hear the commercials on the radio for whatever his channel is has got coming up, you know, tonight at 10 or tonight after Dynasty, whatever is on television anymore. Sorry, that's showing a little bit my age that I would think that Dynasty would be on television.
I remember when Dynasty and Dallas were the two big shows and they were primetime soap operas.
And so for him, the summer, you have no sweeps and you have no kids having to be taken to school and picked up from school and helping them study and, you know, all sorts of happy crappy, going to pick them up at detention. And so this summer was going to be our novels. You know this already, I think. I've probably mentioned it, but I'm just sitting down and making a Rich Outcast, and sometimes you hear reruns on the Rich Outcast, just as you sometimes hear the same stories on the Doonstief, although we try a little bit harder to be amusing there. So, where I am right now is June has arrived, and I have not yet started on the novel, although technically that's not true. My big impediment is, well, twofold, but my biggest impediment is that I was writing a story, a Western story called Into the Furnace, which I was going to not live blog, but blog the progress of this Western story, because I knew when it came time to write the novel that all two people who give a crap whether I write a novel or not would expect to find out how I was doing. They would want some updates. And I thought that the best way to update would be to have a meter that showed how many words was my goal and how many words I had written. It's easy, and it's not just for you, it's for me as well, to see how well I'm doing, how far along I am. Oh, you know, ooh, I'm almost at the quarter mark, or whatever it is. It's a way to chart your success or failure, and to be able to share that in a very easy, you know, at a glance, in 1 second, you see how I'm doing. So I thought I would try that with Into the Furnace. And Into the Furnace is a Western story about a sheriff whose wife dies. And so he up and moves to this little town in New Mexico to take over for their sheriff, who disappeared under mysterious circumstances. I don't know if it's a mystery story. I mean, obviously it's a Western, but it's a Western with a different element to it, not just Westernness. And part of it is what happened to the other sheriff. And when he gets there, he discovers that the town was booming at one time. And the town is just a shell of what it once was. And the reason is people keep disappearing. Animals keep disappearing. Horses disappear. Something is taking them. People are afraid, and so they're leaving town. And so the sheriff has this mystery to solve. And, you know, I don't know if I'm describing it in a wonderful way to make you want to read this book. I think I'm pretty good at that, of saying, okay, this is what the story is. These are the salient points, and this is eye-catching way of describing it. I think I'm pretty good with that. I think I'm pretty good with the titles, too, you know, with writing a title that's either dynamic or interesting or, you know, quoting a song. Stealing a song title and appropriating it for my story. And I think I gave myself the estimate that Into the Furnace would be 25,000 words. At this point, I don't remember when I started that. Right before I began Into the Furnace, I wrote up a little, you know, page and a half summary of where I thought the story should go and points that I think would be interesting. And you know, here's a character that, you know, what if he has a friend from his childhood that he hasn't seen, you know, in all these years? And I guess that would be about 25,000 words to tell the story. And 25,000 is not a short story. It is, I think it's a novella, or it might be a novelette. And I again, it sounds like a rerun. This is something I've said over and over again. I can't remember where the line is drawn between those things. But I thought, well, you know, if I can write 25,000 word story and chart my progress, then the novel is pretty much double that. 50,000 words is what I'm aiming for my novel. And if it's a little longer than that, if it's a little shorter than that, I don't care. As long as it's close to 50,000 words, that was my goal. And it'll be interesting to see if I'm able to achieve that in the summer, in the 90 days. Now, if you've ever listened to Big's Ankle Cast, he's gone over this a couple of times, but I'm going to go over it again because, you know, hey, it's my show, and you may not necessarily listen to his show, and you know what? You may not necessarily listen to this one, but I'm talking, and maybe, you know, 5 years from now, I'll enjoy listening to myself and say, oh, wow, this is how I wrote that book. The 3 months are because in January I went to a writing seminar? Yeah, that's probably good. And one of the panels that I went to was called Writing a Novel in 90 Days. And this is convoluted as well. But that's okay, guys. You're in it for the long haul, right? You would have turned this off if you didn't want to hear me talk. Ooh, did you hear that? That was somebody turning it off. That was kind of cool. Time travel. I wasn't sure if I wanted to go to this seminar because I had gone to it when I was a young man, when I was a student, and people would always be talking about their projects and such, and you know, what goes into the 3-act structure, I don't know. There would be various panels about, you know, the morality of the Star Wars universe. I don't think it was morality. It was like spirituality in the Star Wars universe, something like that. And you went to a panel on that, or writing, what was it? Something, what was it where you write for? Media tie-ins. I remember going to a panel of that. And I never got anything out of these panels. I always got the impression that I would have been better off if I'd sat down and written during these panels, because, well, they rarely gave me anything interesting or useful in these panels, and it was always like, well, you know, I know how to write, I just don't do it very much. I should be doing that right now. And so I hadn't gone to one of these conventions, these whatever seminar things, in years. Going on 20 years, I think. But there was a confluence of coincidences or events or whatever that made me think, well, I'll give it a shot. And the seminar was 3 days. It was Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And I went on Thursday morning, and I just bought a ticket for that day, because you could buy a 3-day pass or you could buy just a 1-day pass. And I knew I had to work the next day, which was Friday. And so, you know, I didn't want to commit for the whole thing, especially if I knew I would be wasting a day, or, you know, if it sucked, then I could write on Saturday. You understand? But what happened was, I got a ton out of this seminar. I really, really enjoyed it. I was around creative people who were not only dedicated to their craft, but serious about it, but energized by being around other people like that. And these were hardworking people who had achieved way more than I had, or were willing to work way harder than I was. And that made me want to up my game. That made me want to work harder. That made me want to dedicate more time or more passion to what I was doing. And you'll find that over and over again, whether it's cosplayers, whether it's artists, whether it's musicians, whether it's, you know, I've been to horror conventions. And I remember the very first horror convention I went to, I thought I was a really big horror fan, because I saw at least one horror movie a week. And I had a horror website. I was passionate about that. I did reviews, a lot of reviews, and I can't remember how many there ended up being, but it was way more than one review a week. And I went to this horror convention, and I suddenly realized, oh, I'm not a real horror fan. I didn't have tattoos of Ash and Leatherface and Norman Bates and Chucky all over my body, and I didn't know who did the score for all of these Italian schlock zombie movies, and I wasn't able to rattle off all of the movies Linnea Quigley had been topless in and things like that. And I realized, wow, I'm not really the horror fan that I thought I was. Wow, these guys really are horror fans. Anyway, at this writer's seminar, I went from the very beginning panel all the way into the very last panel of the night. You know, a lot of times at conventions, you pick one or two panels that you want to go to, and the rest of the time you look around or you eat or you stand in line and stuff like that. But there were so few people at this seminar that you could go to anything that you wanted to, unless there were two panels that happened to be at the same time. And I found that there were times when there would be more than one panel at the same time that I was interested in. They had also upped their game in the years since I had gone to this thing, I guess probably for college credit, maybe I went with my friend Jeff, who used to fancy himself a writer, and he's always been way more of a reader and much more passionate about books than I ever have been. And in all the years since then, they had gotten a bunch of people that flew in from L.A. or Boise. I was trying to think of a place that's not romantic. Not that L.A. is romantic, but you know what I mean. There's a lot of cool stuff that goes on in L.A. And, you know, maybe there's a lot of cool stuff that goes on in Boise. I don't know if I've ever been to Boise. I imagine that it's, like Hill Valley, California, only with more inbreeding. Anyway, I really enjoyed the seminar. And even though I had to go to work the next day, I looked on their schedule and they had a panel called How to Write a Novel in 90 Days, or Writing a Novel in 90 Days, something like that. And I thought, oh, geez, of all the panels, that's the one I should go to. I've never written a novel. I've always been afraid to write a novel. But if I could do it in 90 days, I think I could commit myself to that. I think I you know, even if it's 100 days or whatever, it would be worth it to be able to say I've written a novel. And here's a little sidebar, counselor. I have been told by various people, but I always use Abby Hilton because she's a successful writer and she's outspoken. But she had said, you know, where you need to be is in the novel business. And novels sell, whereas short stories don't. Audiobooks of novels sell, whereas audiobooks of short stories don't. This is what you ought to be doing if you want to make a living as a writer. And, you know, that's a generalization of what she told me. But it's not an untrue generalization. And that stuck with me. I rip on Abby a lot because she's everything that I'm not. So a lot of it is jealousy. It's sour grapes or whatever. But she knows what she likes and she goes after that and she avoids everything else. She's super opinionated and she's really good at what she does. Not just writing, but the marketing of her writing, of making the most of her talents, surrounding herself with people who appreciate those talents and probably just turning her back on the people that don't. And that's something that I wish that I did more. Hell, almost nothing Abby does that I don't wish that I did too. So, you know, if I don't imagine she'll hear this, but if she did, hopefully she would take that in a positive light. It's not a backhanded compliment, and I'm not being facetious or whatever and saying, hey, Abby is so great. Yeah. She is. She's really, really a good writer and marketer and whatever the medical thing that she does, a nurse anesthetist. I can't even say it, let alone do it. So what I did was I wormed my way out of work for an hour the next day. And I came in and nobody asked to see my pass, which I didn't have for that second day. I knew where that room was going to be, where they were having the seminar, the class, the 90-day novel thing. And I went to that, and then I took off, and then I went back to work. And I was pumped in that 90-day thing. In the class, in the presentation, in the seminar, whatever you want to call it. The panel. It was one writer, and he talked about how it had worked for him, and that he challenged us to do it ourselves. And he said, this is how it has worked for me. And all I'm asking you is to try it once, exactly the way that I'm saying it. And if it doesn't work for you, let me know. Maybe we can fudge a couple of things, but at least do as I say once. This guy, Big, also went to a panel with this guy. And so he knows what the guy was like, but he was flamboyant and he was really, he was a guy that was focusing on the positive, which is one of those things that you have to do because this panel was, it felt like a self-help seminar kind of thing. You know what I mean? People pay big bucks to go into a room with a guy who has charisma, who says, listen, you can achieve your goals. You don't have to be mediocre. You can do it. You can be a winner. I think everybody in this room has a winner inside of them and a chest burster. And I dig that. I've actually gone to a couple of things like that in LA. You know, it's just like, hey, you're a winner and stuff like that. And sometimes it worked. Other times I did feel like, oh, shoot, I should be writing. But this one was one of the successful ones, and I wanted to do it. In fact, I wanted to sit down and write a novel and let this guy know that I had done it. Impress this guy, this writer. What was the other thing I was going to say about the guy? If you ever listen to our That Gets My Goat episode where I introduce California Rish, part of that was an imitation of this guy. He plugged his novels. Let's say that he had three of them. It might have been more. But he talked about the premise of each one. And he talked about the writing process of each one. And he talked about how successful each one was and all that stuff. Again and again as examples. Pimping his stuff. Saying, hey, this is something that I've written and it's really good. And this is something that I learned while writing it. And here's something that you might learn if you read my book. Besides just being entertained because these are really good books. I liked that. I thought it was neat. I mean, I didn't feel like the guy was a douche. I just felt like, wow, this guy really is proud of the things that he's accomplished. This guy really likes his work. And, you know, I've written some stuff that I really like too. But somehow, my upbringing, where I was raised, how I was raised, taught me that it was very wrong to boast. It was very wrong to say that you had pride in something. And it scarred me. It ruined me. And you know what? I always had low self-esteem and stuff like that. And I was always in need of attention, wanting to be noticed and liked and all that stuff. And so it wasn't just my upbringing. I mean, a lot of it is just me as well. But boy, I wish that I could tell you, you know, hey, this thing that I wrote, it's really good. I think you will enjoy it. I would like you to buy it. Because I worked hard on it. And you know what? It would be neat to be rewarded for something I worked hard on. Anyhow, I emailed or called Big after that panel and told him, I'm going to write a novel. I think you can do it too. And Big had been talking about writing a novel for a long time. Much longer than I have because, and you may already know this too, I love short stories. I think short stories are where it's at. If I was told you could only write short stories for the rest of your life, I'd be like, okay. To me, that's like, well, you can only have sex with really pretty girls for the rest of your life. I'm like, ah, you can only go out for pizza for the rest of your life kind of thing. I really like short stories. And the other thing that I like are screenplays. And I think I'm a good screenwriter and I enjoy writing those things, but novels are not my bag, baby. I've never really thought that I would be a novel writer, and I didn't think that I had novel sized ideas in me. To me, a short story is, you know, like a short film kind of thing. And then there's the novella, which is kind of like, you know, a movie. But a novel is like writing a mini series. Or a whole TV series, you know, all 12 episodes, all 22 episodes. That's a lot of work. And I, as my father could attest, am averse to work. But I told Big after this panel, I think I can write a novel. And I know that you've been wanting to do it. And I think we should try it. I think we should do this 90-day thing. And he was on board because he had already wanted to do it. He'd wanted to do NaNoWriMo. Which I hate, but it happens to fall in November every year, and that's one of those three sweeps months. In fact, I think November is the worst. November sweeps. Sorry. So he's never been able to do NaNoWriMo. I wonder if June were National Writing Month, Novel Writing Month, if he would have a novel under his belt by now. I'll leave that to you to say yes or no. Okay. So that brings us pretty much to where we are right now. Big has an idea for a novel, and it's called The Gauntlet. And it's a good idea. And I've told him, I was jealous of him. I think it's a good idea. I think it's neat that he has an idea, because I didn't. And as the weeks turned into days, turned into hours before this deadline, or before we had to start on our novels, I realized I didn't have an idea. Because I'm too consumed with Into the Furnace right now. I'm trying to focus on that 100%. Now, you know, last month or last episode, I did a little diversion to give you Chalupa Dale, Next Exit. And I needed that diversion. I enjoyed it. It was so cool to write that and to, you know, be able to present that to somebody. I hope people liked it. I don't know. At the point I'm recording this, nobody has read that or heard that. But, you know, the two or three days that I diverted to do Chalupa Dale, both the writing of the story, the typing of the story, and the recording of the story, and oh geez, the editing too, I forgot. Ugh, I have to edit. I could have dedicated those days to Into the Furnace, and I think I would.
What the hell?
Malfunctioning little twerp.
Oh, battery ran out, guys. I flapped my jaw for a long time, and then I looked down to see how long I'd been recording, and of course, the battery had died. So I'll repeat the last 5 minutes of gibberish. I needed a little break. I wanted to do this Chalupa Dale thing because I thought it would be amusing. And so, you know, there was some time that I took to write it, and some time that I took to transcribe it, I took to record it. Oh, I still have to edit it. So the time doing that is time that I had to take away from Into the Furnace. And maybe if I hadn't done that little diversion, I would be done with Into the Furnace by now. But what the heck? It's only myself I am hurting. But as it stands right now, where we are, I'm really close to being done with Into the Furnace. And I think, you know, that all it would take is one more hard push. The other day, Friday, there was a push. It was my day off at work, and I decided I was going to at least dedicate some time to writing this day. And so I took my laptop and I took it to the park, and I went out on a park bench and I started to write. And I wrote until the battery died on the laptop, which doesn't take a long time, because I found out that it's not my laptop that's bad. It's the cord, the thing that charges it. That's what's bad. But I wrote that, and then I went back. I went to the car, and my intention was I'm going to go get a soda and then go home and do something else. But instead, I got my notebook out of the car and went back to the park bench, and I wrote for a few more minutes. Just so, you know, I could finish the scene that I was writing on the laptop, you know, get it out of my head and onto the paper. And then I came back to the house, and I plugged the laptop in, and I probably, you know, checked Facebook or did something on the computer. But then I grabbed the laptop again, now that it had a little bit of a charge, and I went out here, right here where I'm recording right now, in this same chair, and I wrote a little bit more on it. Then my sister asked me if I wanted to go to my nephew's baseball game. And I said, sure. And so I went, but I took my notebook, and I probably wrote another page and a half or 2 pages at my nephew's game. All in all, I probably wrote 4,000 or 5,000 words that day. It was a really... Okay, it was a day I dedicated to writing. Now, granted, I didn't dedicate the whole day to it or whatever, but it hasn't been since college when I had to write a paper or something like that, you know, and the paper had to be due by a certain time, that I've dedicated that much time to writing. And I know that that's what real writers probably do all the time, but all it would take is another day like that, and I would be done. And I don't know if I already went over this part in the recording that you've heard, or if this was something I said during the dark period when I was just flapping and nobody could hear me. But the ghosts heard, and now they're going to be bored because I'm going to say it again. I recognize that there are times when writing is easy and there are times that writing is hard. And I had a couple of times during writing Into the Furnace when it was hard, when I didn't want to do it, when I realized, oh geez, this is going to be a bigger project than I thought. This is maybe not a novella. Maybe this is a novel. And you know me, I don't know how to write a novel. I don't know how to give characters enough depth to carry a novel and subplots and all that stuff. So I was getting overwhelmed and I was getting nervous that, you know, I wouldn't be able to pull it off. And just today, I made a list of like 4, maybe it was 3, subplots in the story version that would have to be expanded upon if it were a novel, and story elements that really don't go anywhere. I don't know. It may well be that when I finish Into the Furnace, that it is a novel. And I think that, oh, a mosquito just got me. I mean, that's not a big deal. Mosquitoes get everyone. But it was just weird to feel how big it was. I squished it, and I was like, holy cow, that was like the size of a thing that is bigger than a mosquito. Yeah. Anyway, holy cow, sorry. I'm so easily distracted, right? This time an insect distracted me. I think even in this podcast, I referred to Into the Furnace as a book. And I don't know how I feel about that. I intended for this to be a story. Although a big story, because I knew it was going to be 25,000 words, which is a big story. But the funny thing would be if I finish Into the Furnace, and then it's time to write my novel, and I don't have the passion or the creativity or the idea to write something as big as Into the Furnace during this 3-month novel writing time. I guess we'll see. One of the main reasons I came out here to record this was I've been editing Verukia, which is one of, I think it's the 8th Doomrest of Terra book, written by E.C. Tubb. And these are books that it was a series that was started in the 60s. It was started in 1967. And I feel like E.C. Tubb watched Star Trek when it was new. But it's hard to know because I don't know how big a deal Star Trek was. I mean, I guess probably today, any show that got the ratings that Star Trek got would be, you know, American Idol in its heyday, or, you know, Seinfeld's final episode or something like that. But I don't know in 1967 how big a deal Star Trek was. That is a diversion. Sorry, guys. The point I was going to make is the editing process is so tedious. It takes so long. Narrating a book is relatively enjoyable. It's work too. And there have been times when I messed up my voice, or, you know, I start coughing, and then after I've coughed, you could tell that I've coughed with my voice, and I'm like, oh shoot, I gotta stop. So I'm saying that the recording part is work too, but not nearly as much as the editing part. The editing is just no fun. And it's weird because it puts doing the Doonstief into perspective for me, because, you know, a lot of times I would be unwilling to do a Doonstief production because of the time and work required. And now I'm like, well, doing a Doonstief is a step down from doing an audiobook. And it's way more enjoyable, and you get to do sound effects and maybe find music. And so I kind of figured I had to come out here and take a break from the editing. See, now I am hesitant to even mention the thing that the whole reason I wanted to record. But I'm going to. Why not? I mean, there's no time limit on this thing except for the battery died, and maybe the new battery will die as well. It's easy, 40-something years after E.C. Tubb wrote this book, to see where the book is strong and where the book is weak. It's easy to see his strengths as a storyteller and what I perceive as weaknesses, and I don't know if those were actually weaknesses or, you know, editorial demands that he was meeting, or the fact that he didn't have a lot of time. He had to write two of these every year. I don't know if he had to write two of these every year or whatever, but there are some flaws in these Doomrest books. And this one, Verukia, which is the 8th book, is by far the best. It's just really, really solid, and it feels like, it just feels like he was firing on all cylinders, and he had some problems, especially in earlier books. There was one, and I don't know which one it was, probably the 5th book or 6th book or whatever, where I realized during the editing, oh, this is not a good book. Again, that's sad. I'm not supposed to say that because I am in business with this man. and I am in business with the publishing company. So please don't take that in a more negative way than I'm intended to be. And then the last book was called Technos, and it had some really, really good ideas in it. None of which were explored. It just, I don't know how stuff like that happens. I got the impression this is a really good writer, or this is a really good idea man, but he had all these great ideas and he doesn't go anywhere with them. And I didn't feel that way with Verukia at all. Verukia is just a good book. Oh, it makes me want to do the next book in the series all the faster, all the sooner. But this is his 8th book in the series, and I'm sure he wrote other books besides these 8 books by this point in his life, and I've written none. And as you've probably heard me say on the Doonstief, Big and I had a mutual friend who was not able to write his own stuff, but he was really adept at telling you what was wrong with yours. And, you know, that's not to say that he was an a-hole. He just had a talent for saying, this is an area that you need to improve on this piece. And this is something that I liked that you need to expand upon. This is a direction that you need to go or whatever. What his calling probably should have been is some kind of movie producer who calls the shots, who gets the screenwriter's work. And he circles some things and he crosses out a couple things and he gives it back to him and says, okay, you know, this is where I think you should go. He doesn't write the script himself, but he pays somebody else to do it for him. I think that he would be a fine movie producer. And so I realized that as I've been noticing the flaws of these E.C. Tubb books or other people's books, but especially the E.C. Tubb ones, especially Technos, which was not a bad book, but it just, it was just filled with really interesting, like, world-building things and alien culture things that are not gone into. They're just mentioned and then left to blow away in the wind. I realized that I was like my friend. I can't write a book, but I can see what's wrong with this guy's book. Or, you know, what's right and should be writer. And so that's the whole thing that I wanted to come out here and talk about. Because, you know, I've been I've been editing it. Oh, yeah, that was something that I complained about before while the battery was dead, was how long it takes to edit audio, to edit an audiobook. I do it through this company, ACX, which is Audible/Amazon's self-production, audiobook production site. And there are people on there who talk about how fast you can edit an audiobook. And it is ridiculous, the claims that these guys make. I mean, like, they will say something like, what you record in an hour, you can have edited in a half hour. Which, again, dude, how? How on earth? I mean, seriously. If Doc Brown created a audio software device with a flux capacitor in it, I still wouldn't believe that you could take an hour's recording and edit it in a half hour. It always takes an insane amount of time for me to edit. And there are people out there that don't struggle the way I do with the editing, that they have a way of recording where they edit out their mistakes as they're going. And I was going to give them the benefit of the doubt, but no, F those guys. I mean it. F them. Because you can't know that your chair squeaks or that you fart or that you stammer on a word or that you mispronounce lichen. You can't know these things while you're recording and fix those things. Okay, you know, if you stutter on a sentence or if you say the wrong word or whatever, you probably realize that you've made that mistake and you can cut that out and redo the sentence or whatever. But getting like a character's name wrong. Maybe there being a typo that you don't realize is a typo until you just read it as is, or getting a character's voice wrong, or performance issues, or just putting a stress in the wrong place. These are things that you can't catch while you're doing them. You can only catch in retrospect. You can only catch when you're focusing on the edit rather than the performance. And so, you know, it may be that I'm just really, really bad. I don't think that I am. I think that I'm really good. But the editing process is so lengthy and so time consuming and so monotonous and mundane. I thought, okay, I got to come out here and do something. Enjoy the fresh air. It's so cool outside as to be cold to me. But I'm a person that's always cold. I don't know that I've done this before. Have I ever like taken the machine and gone for a walk and made an ankle cast out of it? Ankle cast. A Rish Out cast out of it? I don't know. The last episode of Big's podcast that I listened to, it was like an hour long. And I was really impressed by it. He was talking about the gauntlet and he's talking about his progress and he's talking about the planning. And anyway, I guess that brings us full circle to what I have been talking about this whole episode. I'm really close to being done with the first draft of Into the Furnace. All it would take is another day like Friday where I just focus on it and give it its time and say, hey, you know, I'm going to write until I reach this point, or I'm going to write until I reach the end. And I would be done. And then I could put it away for a little while. I mean, I see the problem is I couldn't just put it away because as part of my dry run obligation to you, the listener, I've said that I'm going to type it up. So we'll know how big it is and how close to done it is or whatever. And so that's, so even when I reach the end, I'm not done, not even done with the first draft. And so, you know, that's more work, but it's pleasurable work, guys. It's oiling down the Hawaiian tropic girls. It's not, it's work, but it's fulfilling work. It's good. But once I finish that, which barring a disaster will be in the next 10 days, then I can go forward with the novel, the other novel, the actual novel of this summer. I got together with Big last week. He was working the morning shift, which is a nightmare in a way. I mean, it's a nightmare for someone like me who can't get up in the morning. You have to be there at 3 a.m. You need to edit and edit and edit and edit before 5:30 a.m. show, 5 something. And the 5 o'clock show goes until like 10 a.m., and then there's an 11 o'clock show. And I think now that there's a noon show, but maybe not. Maybe 11 to noon is the midday show. And then you get to go home. So I met with Big right after that. We got lunch together. And on the drive up, I turned on this little device and I said, okay, what can I do for a novel? What ideas do I have? What would I like to write about? And I have 3 ideas that I've been kicking around for years that are all bigger ideas than just a short story. I think if they were short story ideas, I would have written them by now. One of them is a horror type project. One of them is a science fiction project, and one of them is fantasy. You know, if we were comparing them to movies, one of them is They Live. One of them is Star Trek the Motion Picture, and one of them is Percy Jackson. I have been intimidated by all 3. The first one has been a little bit intimidating because it's the subject matter I know almost nothing about. And I asked my uncle, who just happens to have been raised around that subject matter about stuff. And this was years ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. It wouldn't surprise me if it had been 5 years ago. And in the back of my mind, I thought, well, this is a screenplay that I would like to write. I know I can write a screenplay. I don't know that I can write a novel, but I know I can write a screenplay. And it just feels like a movie to me. And that's probably the main reason I've never written it. If I were still in L.A. and I still thought about screenwriting or whatever, I think I would have written it by now. The science fiction one feels like a whole series to me, you know, like Star Trek, where it's like, okay, what planet do they go to this week, or what character comes on board the ship this week kind of thing. And that's intimidating to me, too, because I've never written series at all, let alone a science fiction series. And then the fantasy one, I come close to writing that. I'm more passionate about that one than the other two. The fantasy story idea or whatever, oh, it's really good in my mind. It's really good. And yeah, it's a trick to translate something from how it is in your mind to actually being on the paper. But that one has always been intimidating too, because it's I've got a really great beginning and a really great middle, and I don't know how to end it. But also because I don't want to say that I've grown up in the shadow of, I live in the shadow of Harry Potter. And Percy Jackson may be a perfectly cromulent series of books or movies, although that second movie was just terrible. But those are poor man's Harry Potter. I was just like, again, the writer, Riordan or whatever his name is, may have totally independently of Harry Potter come up with this mortal children of the gods concept or whatever, but oh, just it screams of Harry Potter. It's almost desperate in its Harry Potterness to me, you know. And that's not fair. It's cruel to say, but I remember reading that second book, The Sea of Monsters, Something of Monsters, and like every 5 or 6 pages, I would come upon something and I'd be like, you know, Rowling did this better. It's like, you know, if Rowling were writing this kind of thing. And, you know, that's a terrible place to grow up, in the shadow of Harry Potter. You know, you may not be a fan of Harry Potter. You may think that those aren't all that good. You're fudging wrong, guys. The Harry Potter books work on all cylinders. There's nothing that those books do wrong. It's shocking. It's intimidating as hell to think about those books. And not only is this fantasy project my attempt to write a fantasy book, but it's my attempt to write a Harry Potter / Percy Jackson-ish fantasy book. Wow, guys. That's a recipe for, you know, mediocrity, I think. Or it's a recipe for comparison, at least. And I'm no J.K. Rowling. So that's why I've stayed away from that one. Despite the fact that I'm more passionate about it, and I like the idea. I just, oh. And again, that one came from seeing Percy Jackson and the Seven Seas and the Goblet of Fire, whatever the hell that first movie was called. And there were moments that I liked, but there were other... There were just things that I saw about it, and I was like, ugh, geez, I don't like that. You know, if I were writing a fantasy, it would be like this. And mostly it's just I was sick to death of the whole Chosen One phenomenon. You know, the idea of destiny and all that. And I thought, well, I want to turn that on its head. If I ever wrote something like this, I would have there be a prophecy too. But I would do everything I could to flip that. Kind of in the same way that the Lego movie does. Remember how they have a chosen one. They have a prophecy of somebody who's going to save them all or whatever. And that prophecy turns out to be nonsense. And so, yeah, it was my take on that kind of thing. And I still would like to do it. But I don't know if I ever will. Because I have all these other ideas that I could write, and very few of them are ever going to be compared to Harry Potter or even Percy Jackson. So, you know, why not write something that's not doomed from the very beginning? And you know what? Maybe that's what is the problem with my Star Trek idea, too. Star Trek is out there. Star Trek has been done. This will inevitably be compared to Star Trek. You know, do you want to invite that kind of comparison? I don't know. It seems like I'm doing a lot of soul searching out here. And I'm also shivering. It's not cold, is it? I mean, maybe I'm just a wuss. But I don't know. Mosquitoes wouldn't be able to function if it were cold, would they? Anyhow, so I figured of the three, the horror idea is the one. The one that I compared to They Live is the one that is most likely to be successful. Not, gosh, I don't know why I say successful. You know me, I'm not a marketing guy. I don't care if stuff sells or not. But it just feels like I already have this screenplay in my head. And if I can translate that screenplay into a book the way that I see it in my head, that will be a success. And so that's the project that I decided just last week when I was driving to meet Big that I would do as my novel this summer. As of now, of recording this on a cold June night, it's not got a title. I think I'm, you know, I actually did come up with a, what do you call it, a working title? Yeah, a working title of Jeremiah's Blues while I was driving to meet Big. So, okay, from now on, I think I'll refer to it as Jeremiah's Blues until I come up with a title that I actually like, because Jeremiah's Blues sounds like a... what does it sound like? A coming-of-age kind of thing? Or it sounds like a Three Dog Night song, too. Anyhow, that's the project that I'm going to start as soon as I finish Into the Furnace. And the longer I wait, the less prep time I'm going to have. And right now, Big is enjoying prep time heaven, where there's still days and days of doing research and planning things out and outlining and asking himself questions about the characters and their backstories and motivations and all that stuff, which I wouldn't be surprised determines the difference between a book that resonates and a book that doesn't. So he's got all that time, and I don't. That should light a fire under me. That should motivate me to finish Into the Furnace right now so that I can begin my planning and at least have a few days of planning before I have to start writing that book. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. Like I said an hour ago when I first came out here, this was my intended Rish Outcast for July. And I know that you've sat here and listened to me talk for a long, long time. And if you enjoy that, thank you. I'm glad. I'm glad that you do. If you don't enjoy it, yeah, I heard you click a long time back. A lot of times, I'm one of those people that needs to say something before he realizes that he thinks it. So this hour of podcasting actually did me some good, even if it didn't do you any. So I thank you for this hour if you made it through. And if you didn't, I thank me for this hour. And I will be back again shortly to tell you how the summer of novel writing is going. And whatever your projects are that you're throwing around, I hope you do something that's important to you, that's creative and challenging to you, like what Big and I are doing this summer. Because you don't grow by doing easy things, you grow by doing hard things. By challenging yourself to do something you've never done before and just seeing if you can do it. Here's to that. Good night.
The Rish Outcast has been released under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 3.0 license. That allows you to listen to it, copy it and share it, but not to sell it, edit it, distort it, or otherwise have your way with it. I know how you are.
All right, another episode done. Time to turn it off. Hello?
Good evening, Outfield.
Sir Fake Sean Connery?
Yes, and I'm not alone.
Hello?
Even Faker Arnold Schwarzenegger?
That's me.
What are you two doing here?
You know your listener, Bria.
Bria Burton?
Yes. Bria was the only one to answer your trivia question correctly.
Oh, yeah, about Chalupa Dale. Yes. She was also the only one to answer the trivia question.
Ah, you must feel terrible.
I didn't until now.
Well, Rish, you owe Bria a song.
Bria.
Yes, we'll sing a duet for Bria. She asked us to.
Bria.
All right. So this is for Bria Burton.
Yes, exactly right.
Now I've had the time of my life. No, I've never felt like this before. Yes, I swear it's the truth. And I owe it all to you.
'Cause I've had the time of my life. And I owe it all to you.
Well,
you. Ooh.
That's good to hear. I've been waiting for so long. Now I finally found someone to stand by me.
We saw the writing on the wall as we felt this magical fantasy. Now with passion in our eyes, there's no way we could disguise it secretly. So we take each other's hand, 'cause we seem to understand the urgency.
Just remember,
you're the one thing
I can't get enough of.
So I'll tell you something.
This could be love,
because I've had the time of my life.
No, I've never felt this way before.
Yes, I swear it's the truth, and I owe it all to you.
Hey, Army.
With my body and soul, I want you more than you'll ever know.
So we'll just let it go. Don't be afraid to lose control. No.
No? Yes, I know what's on your mind when you say, stay with me tonight.
Stay with me. And remember, you're the one thing
I can't get enough of.
So I'll tell you something.
This could be love, because I've had the time of my life.
No, I've never felt this way before.
Yes, I swear it's the truth,
and I owe it all to you,
'cause I've had the time of my life.
And I've searched through every open door
till I found the truth,
and I owe it all to you.
Come on, what are you waiting for? Let's do it!
Now
I
had the time of my life. No, I've never felt this way before.
Never felt
this
way.
Yes, I swear, it's the truth. And I owe it all to you.
I've had the time of my life.
No, I've never felt this way before.
Yes, I swear it's the truth, and I owe it all to you, 'cause I had the time of my life, and I searched through every open door till I found the truth. And I owe it all to you, 'cause I had the time of my life. No, I've never felt this way before. Yes, I swear it's the truth, and I owe it all to you.
It's not a tumor.
Greetings.
Sir, even faker Arnold Schwarzenegger?